Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Smashy Business Show. I am Warid Ahmed, and today I have with me
Abdul Majid.
And you know, good morning, beautiful people. We've got beautiful stories today coming up with Talabat. So Talabat, which was founded in 2004, it has a very interesting story. Now, it was originally founded in Kuwait as Talabat General Trading and Contracting Company. It was then acquired by the German e-commerce group Rocket Internet in 2015, and then it was acquired once again by Delivery Hero in 2016, which became its parent company. Now, the story here is that Talabat is going to launch its IPO on the Dubai financial market. Now, the price range that they're offering for the IPO, it's set between 1.50 dirhams to 1.60 per share, with a total offering size of up to 5.9 billion dirhams. Now, what's the very interesting part here in this story is that their price share, it's between 1.50 and 1.60 dirhams. Now, according to a Bloomberg report, the reason why they specifically chose this price share and they didn't go higher is because when trading actually begins, they want the stock market share to be very stable. Now, why does this entire story matter so much?
It's a homegrown success story. That's why Talabat is one of the biggest names in the delivery market here, known Talabat, Kareem to an extent, Deliveroo for fixed chocolates only, I think.
So these
players, Talabat going for an IPO shows that there is interest in this delivery market to go to IPO. Recently, we saw Lulu go for it, Spinneys went for it, but they're not delivery solely delivery based. They're more supermarket based. But these retail enterprises, there's delivery people, all of them going to the stock exchange. A lot of them chose ADX. We were talking about that in the morning. But them choosing DFM, that is also an important sign because Dubai's financial market is not as strong as the Abu Dhabi stock market, securities exchange, ADX, then Saudi exchange, the regional big markets, then Egyptian, EGX 30. All of these are stronger than DFM.
Yeah.
So this is most probably the first time that such a big name, not in the recent past at least, this is one of the big names which chose DFM. So it shows that they're choosing DFM.
And they're going to have their day soon.
Yeah.
They're going to have their
it's
day
a good
soon
sign.
And more companies will join.
Yeah. The main part of this is that it's a success story. It's a Talabat success story. It's a success story from the region. Kuwaiti startup, then going across all the region, staying in Middle East. So all these parts make it a very good, nice story to tell. The Delivery Hero part, it's important because they're a German company, they own it. We're talking about the share price of Delivery Hero also rising in the past 2.5 months. When they announced that Talabat is going for an IPO, I was looking at the chart right here in front of me. Around August end and September start, the story started floating, and then they finally said that, yes, we are planning an IPO in the fourth quarter, basically the last quarter of 2024. And as of August 13, the share price for Delivery Hero was 21.08 euros. And as soon and if you open the graph and you just keep scrolling forward, it went up and up and up, and now the share price is trading around 36. So that's like a 14-15 euros increase in the parent company's stock price. Talabat obviously is valued at nearly 10.2 billion. If you take the higher 1.6 dirham range, it goes to around 10.2 billion evaluation of the company. Currently, the evaluation of Delivery Hero is around 7 point something euros, which equates to 10 billion. So the parent company and a product which they own are basically the same, they have the same worth right now. So and again, a Talabat success story is not only for the region. Delivery Hero is also riding on the back of this success of Talabat.
But you know, this entire IPO in itself, it's very difficult to view it as like a local victory and a success for Talabat and the Middle East, because Talabat in itself, you know, as I previously said, it's now owned by Delivery Hero. And It's actually, it was reported by the National News that the proceeds of the IPO mm. will be used by Delivery Hero for general corporate purposes and to further mm. optimize its capital structure.
Yeah.
Now, Delivery Hero itself put this out. So what we're mm. seeing here is that this IPO, it's not for the benefit of those delivery drivers. It's,
yeah.
it's not for the benefit of Talabat itself, but for the benefit of Delivery Hero, which yeah. is stationed in it's stationed in Germany. And even what's more interesting is that now when we take a look at this, we know that the money from this IPO, it's going to go to Delivery Hero.
Yeah.
It's not going to go to Talabat. But, you know, by the way, the company itself just recently reported that their cash balance actually is at a strong level of 1.65 yeah. billion pounds at the end of Q3 2024. So their financial position right now, it's very strong. So
yeah.
it's only going to get more stronger from this.
See, this is the fact right now, to be honest, mm. that every company... in the morning with their Rothschild and Company is world's largest independent financial mm. advisory groups there. We did a story about BlackRock, mm. one of the, one not one, even actually the world's largest asset manager. They're opening an office in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
The world is coming here for two reasons. One, they know there is a lot of wealth here
mm.
and they can take that money. Obviously, they work here, so they earn money.
Mm.
So they can use that money for their parent companies in New York, in the US, in Europe. So everyone knows the wealth that is there in this region, the capital wealth that is there.
Mm.
I guess we have so many big sovereign wealth funds. The country is doing great in GDP.
Mm.
Every business is booming here. So there's a lot of money here. Let's there not is. Say capital. Let's say
no,
the
really.
Word. There's a lot of money to be made in this
yeah.
region. The good part that these companies coming into the UAE or in the Middle East, even to Saudi or Egypt at mm. times, when they're coming here, there's two ways that they can go about it. Either take the money and just enjoy and take this money outside mm. and make
yeah.
their companies in their region, Europe, America, stronger. Or they can take some part of that profit and invest mm. it here as well.
Yeah.
And some companies are actually doing it. Some companies, they just don't come here, like suck the money out of the region, whatever they can, and just go back. They're coming here for a longer period because mm. this is just the start of the boom that we're seeing in the Middle Eastern economy.
I definitely agree with you. But you know what's very interesting, Ajit, is that not everybody who actually comes to the UAE, you know, comes to it for its capital pool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, at... Now we know that the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock, as you
yeah.
mentioned, it's going to be here.
Yeah.
They're going to operate in Abu Dhabi. They already have an office in Dubai.
Yeah.
But just like generally on that point of what people, you know, people come into the UAE and what they're going to do with the UAE, it's interesting because my family, you know, my father, he grew up in this country. And when he came to the UAE, yes, he worked here as an employee for a very long time. But when my dad built his business, very interestingly, he took it to Sudan.
Oh.
Yeah. He didn't build it in the UAE.
Mm.
So it's that side of you can come here and you can take advantage of that capital pool, or you can use the expertise that, you know, you grew up around. Like, that's what my dad did. He grew up around the expertise here.
Mm.
You know, he grew up around the capital pool here. You know, he was inspired by the vision. And that's something, you know, he later took on to Sudan. So I feel that there's two ways to go about
yeah.
this. You can either come here, you know, completely make this your, you know, completely make it your home, your capital home. Or you could take the expertise and go somewhere else where there isn't a strong market for something and build it there.
Yeah.
Like, if you had the option, Majid, would you go and build like a large enterprise in Pakistan, or would you develop it from the UAE?
Funny story happened to me yesterday. Yesterday I was talking to one person. I was at the Dubai Future Foundation's Dubai Future Forum in the Museum of Future, a lot of futures there.
Mm.
Every topic that was being covered there was about the future. That even the topic of grief, there was this company which was talking about grief, how
mm.
they help people with trauma and everything. And even they were talking about the future, that how AI will change it, how the future of grief is
mm.
changing. What are the new ways people get grief now, the Gen
mm.
Zs, the Gen Alphas. So I had a very good discussion with one of the people. He's based in Italy, but he works in Congo, Zambia, all these regions. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, like, how do you manage it? Like, you're based in Italy, but you go there and work in those regions. And he's from Cameroon.
So
he's like, I grew up there. I wanted to work there. I learned, same as your father, he learned all the skills. He created an idea and then he went back and made it. And he also suggested to me, he asked me about my story, where are you from? So I told him I was a journalist in Pakistan, moved here because obviously all the reasons that everyone gives you to move to UAE, safety, security, blah, blah, blah.
Of course.
And he was like, and are you, and he posed a very good question. Are you planning to go back and do something with whatever expertise you get from here? Or if you like can get good capital savings, would you plan to go back to your country? And I was taken, I was like flabbergasted, like, what do I say? Am I planning? Am I not? So yeah, your question is very valid, that are you planning to stay here and use whatever you skills you have, capital you have, whatever you have, whatever you build here, would you reinvest it here or would you take it back?
I would.
But right now, everyone has a different, plan. I would love to go back to Pakistan. And after like yesterday's the first day, today is the second day, it's there, it's happening. After like listening to so many people talking about just about the future, that what does the future entail?
He went to the Dubai Future Forum, by the way.
So yeah, so everything was about future.
You know, Majid, what's so interesting is that, yes, my dad set up his business in Sudan, but we continue to live here. We continue to, you know, grow up here. My dad would just constantly travel back and forth, as a lot of dads do, between Sudan and Dubai. But the reason why he left us here is because, you know, that was actually him investing into the country, because he recognized that the education offered here, it's truly exceptional. I went to Emirates International School, Jumeirah, and for my dad, by the way, we could have gone to Sudan. We could have studied IB there. Sudan has amazing schools. It does. Like, a lot of the people, one of the most famous IB schools in Sudan, it's called KIX. And a lot of people in it, by the way, go to a lot of Ivy Leagues. Like, every single year, they're rolling out a lot of people who go to Ivy League, even more so than my school. But my dad, he saw that us growing up here in this country and going to these schools, that if we did that, we'd have a better shot at success in the UAE, even more so than he did. Because he saw the rising market, because of the fact that the market is rising. Yes, there are opportunities, but please, let's not forget the competition. The competition, it's absolutely insane. Even if you have a really good idea, even if you have a really good basis, there are a million other people who have the same other ideas. Like, the country is congested. There are a lot of people. So, but my dad didn't completely take us out. He made us stay here, and the schools that we went to, like, Majid, this is something I am always so grateful for. Education, it's such a privilege. Education, truly, it is the biggest investment that you can ever make in your children, really. That's something I'm really, mom and dad, really thankful for you. But he left us here because he saw the education here, the networking pool that you can have, you know, far greater than, you know, any other capital pool that you can ever have. And that's why I'm here today. So we see it in that. And for our next topic today, Majid Al-Joker, the Chief Operating Officer of Dubai Airport, went on to LinkedIn to share that Dubai Airport has hit more than 68 million guests. Imagine that. It's a very big number in the first 9 months of 2024, with a 6.3% increase compared to 2023. Now, it's very funny reading this, because just 3 days ago, my grandfather arrived from Saudi Arabia. Wow. And, you know, he came in at night and he went, like, it was so busy. It was bustling. I remember there was a time, Majid, where the airport was not that filled. Like, there were certain parts of the year where my family would travel and there was barely anyone. But now all I seem to be hearing when family is traveling back and forth into Dubai and out of Dubai is that the airport is always packed. It's always, always packed. And and so basically, DXB actually processed 60.1 million bags with a leading accuracy rate of 99.3%. And India actually remained the top market with 8.9 million guests, followed by Saudi Arabia, the UK, Pakistan, and the US. London was actually the most popular city destination. From this, we're seeing that not only are people coming into the UAE, but there is such a diverse pool that is coming here. A very, very diverse pool.
And people are going to their countries for holidays or whatever. But yeah, DXP has retained its title as the world's busiest international airport for the 10th consecutive year. So it shows you how many people come to Dubai, underscoring its global prominence. The surge in passenger number highlights Dubai's strategic role as a global aviation and trade hub, supporting its economic growth. Investments in biometrics and real-time tracking, that's the most important part, I think, because there's smart gates. You could just go scan your passport, scan your face, and just leave. You don't have to stand in like long immigration lines or baggage claim lines. You can just go in, do an online check-in 48 or 24 hours before the flight. Go put your bag in a machine, it'll give you automatically a sticker and everything. Everything is so automated, and there's so much less human contact that it becomes easier for you to just go. So you're like, it hardly takes 10 minutes to get inside the airport now. I'm talking about 10 minutes even like at a very busy time. If the airport is empty, you go for a flight which is not that, you go at a time which is not that very busy, it's hardly 5 minutes. I remember you just walk in, check in online, put your bag in the machine, take the tag and everything, and just go to the smart gate and you're inside. Now you can go through the security and everything. So hardly 10 minutes. That's the most important, that part that everyone, I think, loves. So yeah, also the winter is coming. Not the Game of Thrones winter, but winter is coming. So because of that also, the weather is getting better. So a lot of people are now traveling to Dubai. It's the season of festivities in Dubai and across the UAE and Middle East also. So this is happening there. They're growing routes also, the Dubai International Airport. So that's one important part, that why this is happening. And these are the main things, I think, what the Dubai International Airport has done.
And thirdly for today, our topic is about gold. Now, I love gold. And one of my favorite cities, Dubai, it's leading the way with the global gold trade revolution. Now, through DMCC, Dubai has risen to become the world's second largest gold trade hub, surpassing the UK in 2023 with $129 billion in gold trade and a 36% increase. Now, DMCC reported that the rise of gold centered on BRICS nations in the UAE is going to completely reshape global gold trade patterns, and that sanctions and shifting global dynamics have led central banks to increase gold purchases and reconsider the dominance of the US dollar. That's what's really interesting about all of this. So what's basically happening is because the worth of gold is going up in the price in general, banks are now actually increasing their gold purchases. Now, from AI-driven exploration to blockchain-based tracking systems, innovations are, they're actually defining how gold is sourced, traded, and invested in. And this Future of Trade report that was released by the DMCC, it provided a very detailed analysis of the precious metal market trends and that they also have challenges.
Yeah, there's some conference which happened. I don't remember the name exactly, but it's Precious Metal Conference, which happened on 18th and 19th November. Like 2 days ago, this report was published because of that, like to just give a boost. So the report also says that UAE has become a key player, because the best part about UAE and the Middle East overall is it's in the middle. So it connects east with west. So there's a lot of trade that happens through this corridor in the world. So because of that, gold trade in the UAE is rising. That is one reason. And as a central hub, Dubai boosts its influence over global trade, obviously. The report highlighted that Dubai's ability to adapt to global financial shifts is also very strong. We have seen the Middle East tensions that are going on, the genocide in Gaza by Israel, the Israel trying to get into Lebanon, all this happening. Even then, this these two, three countries, they've stayed stable. Their economy has stayed stable. Also, the dollar and dirham conversion rate is always stable. It's 3.6. So a lot of things are good about this country when it comes to economics.
For sure.
They're very stable economically. So that is why everyone
And you
wants
know, Majid, I've been to the Gold Souk. Like, it's my favorite place. By the way, I love the souk in Dubai. I love it. It's always so, like, bustling.
Yeah.
And even, like, the vendors, the people who sell to you, they're always the nicest people in the world. But what I would honestly suggest is that become friends with that person selling you gold, because they will draw a really good deal for you if you're friends with them. Because, like, imagine my mother, she's friends with all of them. She knows all of them for, like, you know, 6 years now. And every single time I go with her, my mom is like, hey, you've known me for a long time. Draw a good deal. And if gold is getting more expensive, you need that good deal.
It's a very good long-term investment, gold. A lot of people in my country invest in dollars, not in gold. It's a very weird idea, I find, that they invest in currency. But a lot of people I've heard that they
Why do you find it weird?
Investing in currency, but I guess in my country, it's an underdeveloped. I don't think Pakistan is a developed country. Some people say, but it's underdeveloped, the amount of poverty and the loans and everything that is happening in the country. But people invest in dollar because it's always going up. So gold, people believe that gold prices will always go up.
But dollars can drop.
Yeah, dollars can drop. But in our economy is going so bad that dollar always goes up. I remember my brother starting investing in dollars when $1 would come for around 150 Pakistani rupees. So 150 Pakistani rupees was equal to $1. Now it's around 280. So whatever he invested is like at least 60-70% rise. So yeah, a lot of people invest in foreign currencies and are in that region especially. And gold is one of the commodities that is very famous in our region as well. You must have seen a Bollywood movie, you'll always see a girl with all the gold sets and everything. Yeah, so
it's my dream to attend an Indian wedding, by the way.
They're crazy. They're like a whole festival throughout the week.
So. You know, I spoke to one of my Indian friends, Majid, and I was like, you know, like, tell me, like, when a girl gets married to an Indian, like, what happens when a girl gets married to an Indian man? And he said, not only will the husband get her a lot of gold, but the aunties, the uncles, and I was like, whoa.
It's like
I love
a very nice trend in Asia that they give you gold as a future security. So they don't give you money because money devalues. So for the same money, they'll buy, like people who are not that well off, they'll buy you a 5-gram coin or 1-gram coins. Or Yeah, so you can keep that gold and like 5-6 years down the line, worst case scenario, if you see any financial difficulty, you can always sell it. So that is the idea behind giving gold as a gift.
But you know, at the same time though, Majid, you know what that friend also told me? That's why a lot of, that's why a lot of Indians will go bankrupt when their children get married.
Yeah.
Because of the gold. Because even if they don't have money, they don't settle for the option of buying a small gold piece. Apparently, they go and they rent the gold.
It's like the concept exactly is dowry. So when a girl is getting married to a guy and the guy has a higher financial status or a societal status, usually the girl's parents give a lot of money, car, flats, businesses, and gold to the guy.
Is this in Pakistan too?
Yeah,
Pakistan,
it's like an Asian thing, dowry. And they're very against it. Now there's a lot of every influencer, every media. There's actually laws against it in India, that I know. Pakistan, I don't remember exactly because they don't have any laws for anything. But India, they have a law against dowry, but still people demand it. So, and people sometimes give it. It's just like giving your daughter to a very high status person so she can live happily. But that is why the father and the family pay the price. It's a very weird concept.
It's so weird. I find it so misconstrued because if he's of high status, he should be offering all that, not her. But just in general, back to our topic, the reason why the global hub becoming stronger in Dubai, the reason why it's so special and that this is going to be really important for the future of the UAE is because it's drawing them away from from, you know, traditional westernized ways of making money.
Yeah.
They now have a new capital pool that, you know, they can rely on. And just more than that, what it's going to do is that it's also going to liberalize trade, and it's also going to create further partnerships between the UAE and India. And investors are going to be able to leverage now AI, blockchain, and fintech innovations to cut costs. So what we're going to see is the gold industry in itself, not only is it going to make a lot of money, but the way that gold in itself is made, is it's going to completely change.
Yeah. Some other things, let's do some new segment today also. Mm-hmm. In other news, Stephen Bartlett concluded the Asia Tour.
Yes.
What did the story here? He stopped at a lot of locations. Dubai rents and properties are property prices are rising again. You can go to our social media and see that story. There's a Dutch Palatina startup. She did a very good face-to-camera PTC on it. You can go watch that. It's about talent acceleration program. They're helping Palestinian youth.
Yeah, basically what they do is that it's called TAP, and what they do is that they help people in Jordan, Lebanon, and Palestine find remote jobs in like international companies like World Bank and Google. And the reason why the initiative in itself it's so special is because they actually have offices in Nablus and Gaza, and despite the fact that, you know, the war keeps being raged, the company keeps operating. But, you know, very interestingly, soon they're going to be moving their operations into Dubai and Saudi Arabia.
Nice. Yeah. So yeah, Palestinian youth is getting hope from a lot of people. And there's this innovative social media networking platform, Bubble, that got $350,000 in pre-seed funding. Mm. It's a women-led startup.
Yeah.
That is why it was a very important story. Aya Al-Hamoud, she's the founder.
Mm.
And they raised $350,000 from an angel investor, if I remember correctly. So this is all also happening.
Yeah, but even more interestingly with Bubble, other than the fact that it's female founded, is that it was founded this year.
Oh,
2024, nice. Imagine. And I believe in March, and just in like these few months, it's grown so much. Like it's even been ranked as one of the top apps on Saudi Arabia's Apple.
Nice.
Yeah. So with that being said, thank you so much for watching, everyone. This is Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, a part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. Don't forget to tune in with us on every single app. You can have us on Beehive. We have a newsletter. We have an Instagram, LinkedIn, and X, and a WhatsApp channel. Please follow. See you tomorrow.